those. You know, I know people who have, they're not the cleverest person in the world, but if you give them some kind of three-dimensional puzzle in which they have to kind of take a look at a three-dimensional design and kind of manipulate it in their mind and figure out how to get it to come together, they can do it. So it's an innate talent, I think. So it's partially a talent and partially learned, I guess, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, when it came out, I used to sit on the Long Island Railroad. I was one of the people that was trying to do this Rubik's Cube. And you would walk, you know, if you walk from car to car from day to day, you know, you'd always find a couple of people trying to do that. When that thing first came out, it was really something. You know, you had plenty of time every day. You know, people would be doing this. Back to you.
Yeah, it was a very lucrative design. Everyone and their brother had a Rubik's Cube. Then they had little Rubik's Cubes that were connected to keychains, big Rubik's Cubes. When I was doing my little demonstration of 3D model making for amateur radio operators, one of the objects that I brought to the table during those hamfests was a Rubik's Cube that I created on my 3D printer, and you know that amused people. So yeah, it was very well designed, and to this very day, there are people who play around with them. There's very few gadgets that have that type of a life expectancy. I mean, Silly Putty, they sell it, but I don't think too many people buy it. Hula hoops, tops, yo-yos, but I think I see more of those cubes than any of the other things, frisbees. You know, think of all the little gadgets that's still being sold, sort of, but you almost never see them.
Roy, don't you think that somebody who has a mind for higher mathematics would be more likely to have a mind for this, or do you think there's absolutely no connection?
I tend to think that there's not much of a connection. Again, you would sort of want to think that the guy do three-dimensional manipulations in his mind was doing them as mathematical operations, which they can be done as very complex forms. We sort of touched on it a few years ago when I talked about imaginary numbers and such. But in this guy's case, he wouldn't even know what an imaginary number was. Better yet, the higher math that you would really need to do sophisticated 3D manipulations. So, no, I think there's a talent. I think you can develop algorithms that you could then run computer programs that can do things a lot faster. But I think a lot of the math is kind of under the hood, deep under the hood, on a neural level, when it comes to people's conceptual manipulations. At least that's what I feel.
They must have up with a computer that could solve a Rubik's Cube. Have you ever seen a kind of demonstration like that?
Well, yeah, I've seen a bunch. Unfortunately, a few of them, I would say, were kind of not legitimate because what was really going on is the machine was randomizing it, but remembering all the steps that it took to randomize it. So all it had to do was backtrack on its recorded manipulations, and it could bring it back to its original condition. But I'm willing to bet you almost anything that there are Rubik Cube solving computer algorithms out there.
Paul? Yeah, as I say, I just saw a film with who slapped Chris Rock, I forget his name, a very early film of his. He was a single father and was trying to sell these bone density machines, which he couldn't sell, and he was broke. They ended up sleeping in flop houses, and then he got a internship at a brokerage house. And they chose him partially because he was very good in math. And there was this one scene in a cab. One of the reasons that he got chosen was the head of HR was trying to solve a Rubik's Cube, and he said, give it to me, I can do that, and he did it. And so that's why I wondered if there was a correlation. But okay, Space Nest report time, more important than Rubik's Cube, so I'll say 73. Thanks, Rory, and everybody else.
Hey, that was Will Smith, by the way, that you're alluding to, I believe. And we'll get to it in 1 second. Jim wanted to say something, so Jim can have the last word for tonight for this segment.
So leaving on a positive note, I'll say that we each are born by the nature of DNA and all that stuff with a unique computer, hardware as it were, and through a lifetime we develop our unique software. And it's an unanswerable question about the Rubik's Cube. Everybody's got a different machine that's trying to solve it, and they're all remarkable. Some less so than others, but they're all remarkable in their own way. And it's nice when we talk about that and literally celebrate. So it's a nice way to finish up. Back to you, Roy.
I agree. A very nice way to finish up. Yeah, the brain is a mystical device. We don't have a clue how almost any of it works. We have very, very slight ideas. We know where some of it is taking place. We know what the underlying biology seems to be. There's one guy out there who's a brilliant physicist, but not quite stable, who thinks that memories are based on quantum entanglement phenomena, which he has no proof of. Anyway, and we all have one of those brains, so please feel free to use them regularly. Thank you to everyone who participated tonight. We kind of started a little slow, but we worked our way through, as we always do. So I thank you all. Now it is time for the SpaceNet Report with Paul WS2N.
AC2GS, KD2FIU, with a question.
WS2N for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet. And, great topic tonight. And especially the Rubik's Cube. I got a kick out of that. I guess I was in my late 20s when I was trying to do that. And finally succeeded, but it took probably 6 months of my life to solve that stupid thing. But as time went on, they had a book, and then you realize there's a system, and then you just follow that system. So that's the key. And you definitely don't have to be a math genius, because I'm not one of them. anyway, the SpaceNet report that was launched, that took place on the 15th, the day after Valentine's Day. It was supposed to go up on Valentine's Day. And it's a mission to the moon. Nova C, they call it, by Intuitive Machines. They're the ones that built this thing. It took off successfully. They used the Falcon 9 to launch from Launch Complex 39A, which is that big launch complex that SpaceX uses. It had to leave from that launch complex. They have another launch complex in California, and they also have another one in Florida as well, Launch Complex 40. But it had to go on 39A because it uses a methane fuel, liquid methane fuel, and liquid oxygen. And SpaceX has the capability of fueling liquid methane from that complex, because that's where they're setting themselves up eventually to launch maybe even a starship from these complexes. But they do have that capability, so they need liquid methane for their VR-900 engine, they call it. And that's the one that's going to helping them get to the moon. Left the Falcon 9, and it's
also going to be the one that actually lands on the moon using that engine. So, yeah, it has they call it BR-900, so it has a capability of going up to 900 pounds of thrust, but it could, you know, could throttle down all, to almost nothing, so, which it will need to do when it does land. So, like I said, it took off successfully, and it's on the way now. And I was wondering if the Deep Space Network was making contact with it. And sure enough, earlier tonight, during the beginning part of the net, I did see that the Deep Space Network was definitely in contact with that vehicle. And they were testing out, they call it the Lunar Node 1. That's the one of the devices that's going to help the spacecraft land on the moon. And right now, it's not there yet. It's almost there. It was a couple hundred thousand miles away when the Deep Space Network was working it. In fact, they were working out of Madrid. Then, as different antennas located 120 degrees around the Earth. So they have them in California, Madrid, Spain, and Australia. So, you know, apparently that everything must be going good. I heard good reports so far from this company, Intuitive Machines. So we're waiting for a landing on the 22nd of this month. Couple of days from now, what is that, Thursday? I haven't gotten the time of day yet. So we'll be landing on the south pole of the moon. That's the main location where Artemis eventually wants to go. Artemis, after crew flight, that will be landing there. Eventually setting up a base, but they definitely want to land on the south pole of the moon. And that's where this one is going. Not too long ago, India landed their vehicle there successfully. Some of the other ones weren't so successful in the last year or so. And one from Israel that didn't make it. One from Japan that, well, that just made it, but wound up upside down. And a couple of other ones that had problems. But I think this one's got a good chance. It's got all kinds of high-tech navigation type of stuff. It's got a LIDAR on it. It's got special lasers down to determine not only how fast it's going as it's approaching, but it's going to show how fast and its location at the same time. I think it's going to make it, which is pretty exciting. NASA needs to have these things on the moon. I'm picturing a number of these things on the moon by the time you have a crew mission going there. I've said it before. I can picture live video of a crew mission coming in for a landing. I think that will eventually happen. And it would be, from one of these types of landers. I don't know if it's going to be this one. This one will probably last a few days, and then the moon always goes into darkness. And I don't know if this one's got the capability of coming back to life after 14 months, after 14 days. We'll see. There's a lot to this particular mission. NASA has 6 experiments on board that they're involved with, so they're heavily involved with it. They always have been with this particular, not this company. The companies have changed names over the years. But I remember maybe 20 years ago they had the Morpheus project that was going on in Florida. They took a piece of the runway for the shuttle, and they it made it like a Mars or a moon setting, and rocks and boulders all over the place they put there. And they were testing this type of vehicle years ago, probably I think 2014 or so. They were making regular flights with this thing called Morpheus, and it was liquid methane, liquid oxygen like this one is now. And it would fly over over this area that they laid out in Florida. And, you know, first it would take off, of course, and would eventually fly over the area, then come down and land between the boulders and rocks. And it was apparently very successful. As time went on, this company and other companies had contracts with NASA to do the same thing, except with real landers like this one. So we'll see if Odysseus, by the way, is the name that they gave it. Odysseus makes it on Thursday. Any questions? The US2N for the Space Network Report.
This is Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. I'm Charlie, and I got a couple of questions.
Good evening, Charlie. And this is Paul, WS2N. Go ahead.
Paul, is that F9 rocket, is that reusable?
This one that's landing on the moon is not it's not reusable. It's going to land on the moon and it's going to stay there. Did you say the Falcon 9 rocket? Did you ask if the Falcon 9 is reusable? Is that what you asked? Yes, it is. You're a little low. That's what you asked. Back to you, Charlie.
Okay, that Falcon F9, if that's reusable, how slow is it coming back down to Earth? Because this thing is about 80 feet long.
Yeah, total length of the Falcon 9, I believe, is 220 feet, or something like that. But the first stage is around 180, and then the second stage right now is not reusable. So it launches with the nine Merlin rockets, Merlin C rockets, 1.7 million pounds of thrust total when it leaves the Earth. It goes up for about 2 minutes, separates from the second stage. Second stage continues on with a single Merlin D engine. Each one of those has around 200, a little over 200,000 pounds of thrust, and that one pushes the payload off. In this case, it was the payload they contracted with Intuitive Machines to send it to the moon. But yeah, the first stage, the booster, is definitely reusable. I think this was the 16th or 17th usage of that particular booster. So yeah, in this case, they brought it all the way back to actually Cape Canaveral. They launched out of Kennedy, which is Launch Complex 39A, and about a total of 8 minutes later, that thing comes flying through the atmosphere and lands. They have two landing zones. They call it Landing Zone 1, Landing Zone 2, at an old launch complex called Launch Complex 13. And that's where this particular booster came down and landed. And when it lands, yeah, they've got a touch down at zero, you know. Let me drop it.
Yeah, how many Falcon 9 rockets do you run spaceship going up?
About half a dozen Falcon 9 boosters, over at SpaceX. So they keep reusing these things. And then I guess the last new one was probably about a year ago. They had a brand new one at least. Some of them are, you know, five, 10, 15. And I think the record now, I think they said one is up to 18 reuses, reuses on a first hit, Charlie. But it's pretty amazing. I don't know if you ever, if you ever looked at the YouTube of these things. Just do put it into a computer. It's really fascinating to watch this thing come back and land. Most of their landings are usually out at sea. They have the drone ships out at sea, and then they'll come down and land directly on that drone ship vertically, with these four landing legs, and then that floats back to Cape Canaveral, and they start all over again. Back to you, Charlie.
All right. Thank you very much for that information. I'll be listening tonight.
Real good. Very good. And they've been doing this quite a while. It's pretty steadily for many years now. They've been launching crews up to the International Space Station since 2020. They've done seven crews for NASA up to the International Space Station. And they launch four at a time. And number eight is coming up, I think, in a couple of months. But they have, there's another company, Boeing and Lockheed. They're involved, well, actually Boeing with the built the Starliner spacecraft, and that will be going up. They predict that's going up in April, and that will have a crew on it as well. But the rocket that goes up in is Atlas V, which is probably almost 100 flights, but that's not reusable. SpaceX, they're up to like 200 flights. Wait, I think this was a correction. I think this was, the last flight was 299, I think they said, when they launched the one to the moon. So they're doing a lot of flights, SpaceX. But, there's the other people that will be competing with them soon, including Boeing and Lockheed. They have built the Vulcan rocket, and that just did its first launch. That will be launching its second flight, probably in April as well. But there's a lot going on. But right now, SpaceX, of course, has the lead with reusable flights. There's another company called Rocket Lab, American company, but they launch out of New Zealand. They're going to start reusing their rockets as well. They don't come down and they come down and land in the water. They pick them out of the water, and they're going to start reusing them that way. That's the way to go in the future. You can't throw these things away anymore, Charlie.
You can reuse the engines. The amount of money you would save. I just can't understand how, when they come back down, and they land in the water, but I'm sure there's some sort of damage each time they land.
Yeah, Rocket Lab is coming down with parachutes, and they just do like a splash down in the water, and they pick it up with the boat. They're not made of metal, though. That rocket is carbon 5, where SpaceX is aluminum alloy with their Falcon 9 rocket. So they come down on a ship out at sea. They have three different ships that they could use. They do this out in California as well. So they have one big ship out in California. Another barge. Two barges on the East Coast. But Rocket Lab does it with carbon fiber. Nowhere near as big as rocket. They have a smaller payloads. But they come down with a parachute now. They'll pick them up. And they have reused one or two engines. But now they're going to start reusing all. They have nine engines as well on the booster. And in the second stage on both these companies, they're lost. They go into orbit, and then they just deorbit them when they're done with their job, and they burn up in the atmosphere. So we'll cover all of these things as time goes on. all. You know, there's so many companies now launching. We're trying to. It's almost impossible to keep up with, but we'll try. This is WS2N. Any further comments or questions? Okay. It was a couple of years ago called Armadillo Aerospace. And they started, they're the ones that started with the liquid methane, liquid oxygen vehicles. And they were funded by NASA to develop these vertical takeoff, vertical landing, you know, they call them VTVL vehicles. And they used to practice out of Florida. And they all, you know, it's open source, so companies figured out how to duplicate this stuff on a larger scale, like SpaceX with their reusable vehicles. And this company that just had their vehicle sent off to the moon, that's a liquid methane, liquid oxygen engine. Now we will be coming down on, you know, on the surface of the moon. That's all done with the history of Armadillo Space, which, you know, they're not in business anymore, but all the engineering and everything that took place, you know, decades ago are now being used by other companies. But NASA's still heavily involved. They got money involved with this moon landing. I'm sure it will be on the news, many news stations, on Thursday. You know, Thursday and Friday, with this thing landing on the moon. Hopefully it's successful. It will be a good break from all the politics and nonsense that I see on the news lately. Years ago, well, anybody that's older remembers, space program came on, and we used to watch that stuff for 24 hours a day. Drop it. Yeah, we could do that with the internet and everything today, but I don't know, there was something great about, you know, just watch 7, you know, for hours on end, you know, all about the space program years ago when I was a kid. And we don't have that anymore. Unless there's a big space mission, and then, you know, they'll cover it. I did see on CNN when this thing went up a couple days ago that they did cover the story of the launch. You know, years ago they used to put breaking news, and, you know, you'd sit there and watch the launch. At least no more. Unless it's a big deal. To me, this is a big deal to have NASA involved with a commercial company that built this thing, landing on the moon. And this company has two more missions planned, actually, for this year. So if this was successful, you know, I'll be waiting for further launches, you know, as the year progresses. We'll see. WS Trent Fred, any other comments?
So, Paul, when did you say they
I'm looking for this Thursday, unless they have a flight delay for Friday. But definitely Thursday, it looks like. That's what they're... I've been reading anyway. The 22nd. So that should be pretty good. Right now, it looks like they're over halfway there. And I think they're probably going to start picking up speed because they get into the gravity well of the moon, and they're not going to go into an equatorial orbit. They're going to when they go into the vicinity of the moon, they're going to go to the North Pole, you know, over the North Pole, and then they're going to orbit, you know, in a like a 90-degree inclination. So they land. I don't think they're going to do more than one or two orbits. You know, they're going to go 100 miles up, roughly 100 up, when they first go into lunar orbit. And then they're going to light their liquid methane, liquid oxygen engines to slow themselves down. And then they're going to be going into a 10-mile high orbit, which is, you know, that's the standard operating procedure when you want to land on the moon. You go to that 10-mile orbit, 10-mile high orbit. That's what, you know, the Apollo guys did. You know, the command module stayed in orbit around 10 miles high while the LEM went down to the surface with the other two guys on it. So that's, you know, they're going to get into that, you know, that orbit, and then they're going to fire the engine again, methane engine, and, you know, from that point on, they're going to head down and hopefully land. You know, they'll be able to throttle one way or another. It's all autonomous, radar on board. They have infrared cameras on board to look down on the surface, helping them land. And then they have also LIDAR, laser system, looking down at the moon. They also have four cameras surrounding the lander. As it comes down, we'll be looking at the dust and everything that kicks up. NASA really wants to study that. They want to know a lot about what happens, you know, with, you know, what we've done before. They want detailed pictures with these cameras of the dust and rocks, things, you know, when they went in. This way, they'll have all that information for future landings, especially when you have a crewed landing going down. They want to be able to do this. You know, you're going to have big vehicles landing with people in a couple of years, you know, from now. And that's going to throw up a lot of debris, a lot of regolith, a lot of dust and dirt, you know, through the areas. You know, if you have, let's say, a little base nearby, you know, is all this debris going to, you know, affect, you know, some infrastructure that you've already built there? They're going to want to know all this, and that's one of the things they're going to study, and NASA is involved with the cameras as this thing comes down and lands. So, now this has six legs, stand, you know, sticking out, and, you know, when the LEM used to launch, and they separated from the Apollo spacecraft, those legs opened up, you know, because they had to have them folded up because there wasn't enough room inside the spacecraft.
Well, when are they going to have a manned flight?
Okay, manned flight is coming. The first manned flight was just going to go around the moon and come back, and that was scheduled for the end of this year. They delayed that until next year, next September. So two Septembers from now, that will not be a landing mission. They're going to test out the avionics and the breathing capabilities and the sleeping quarters and, you know, everything for human space flight. That will be tested with four people. Two Septembers from now, roughly a year after that. That's the plan. Their plan is to actually land on the moon. Present plan is to send two people down, leave two people in the orbiter. That's the present plan. I think things might change, Charlie, because of scheduling. We'll see. I think things definitely might change. But that's the present plan, and then the fourth mission, I'm going to drop it. When I say the fourth mission, we've already had the first mission. The first mission was two Decembers ago when Artemis 1 went around, orbited the moon, came back. Artemis 2 is going to be the first four-person crew orbiting the moon. Artemis 3 will land on the moon, at least the moon, for us. And then Artemis 4 is different. Artemis 4 is going to we're going to have, by that time, we're going to have a space station called Gateway around the moon. It will dock with Gateway, and then after that, you know, they'll actually leave the space station and go down to the moon. Return from the moon, go to the space station again, and then get back to the same kind of spacecraft from Artemis and head back to Earth that way. So, and then roughly every year after that, you'll have a new flight. And they have dreams of having around 40 of these flights in the future. So we're only at the very beginning of what's going on. Back to you, John.
Yeah, but what kind of tests are they doing that they haven't done already?
Yeah, I missed that one. What kind of something are they doing?
What kind of tests are they doing that they haven't done already?
Well, for instance, these four cameras, they're going to be taking pictures of how much stuff gets thrown out, where it goes. They need more information about that. They need to improve the spacesuits. Spacesuits have problems with the regular, they call it regular, the dust and dirt on the moon. It tends to stick to everything all over everywhere. So on this flight, they do have a test for that. They're going to try to evaluate the soil. They actually had a test that went up on a suborbital flight to test the polarity of dust and dirt, from, you know, similar to what you have on the moon. They want to study that. The goal is to figure out a way to keep the stuff off their spacesuits and all their equipment. It's really not good. Can't inhale it. It's very dangerous to inhale. It could get into different joints, stop all the gaskets, different things that are involved with mechanical equipment. So that's a big problem. They might solve that problem. And we'll see. Goal, of course, eventually to set up a base on the moon. That's, you know, many years from now, but, you know, that's the goal. They plan on having a permanent location somewhere down the road on the moon, similar to, I guess, what you would have down in Antarctica, you know, down in the South Pole, I guess, Sean.
I mean, for people, you know, if you want to go beyond the moon, you just stop there, like stopping at a gas station?
I've heard that. I don't know if I agree with that system, though. But yes, that's partially what they're thinking. Now, I suppose you develop a base on the moon. You know, the theory is, well, if you launch from, let's say, they call it Gateway, the space station that will be going around the moon. If you launch from there, yeah, you don't have to, you don't need the tremendous thrust and everything that you would need from Earth to leave that location to go off to Mars. To build that kind of infrastructure on the moon, where you're going to take, you know, frozen ice that's buried in these craters, and, you know, now with that you're going to get water, and you're going to separate that, you're going to get hydrogen and oxygen. Now you can fuel up these big rockets to eventually get you to Mars. That sounds like it would take decades and decades to develop a system like that. Personally, I think they're better off, you know, practicing on the moon, see what it takes to live and work on the moon. The temperatures are much more extreme on the moon, so if you could do that, you'd have a shot at Mars. And then I would just launch, you know, from Earth. You know, that's my theory. But we're looking for, you know, like I said, decades and decades away, I think, to get to Mars. Elon Musk thinks he could do it overnight. Well, good luck with that. The infrastructure won't be there for him. Anybody else have a comment, including you, Joy?
WB2BX, sir.
Hi, Frank. How you doing? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, very good. It somehow makes sense to me not to launch Mars missions from inside Earth's gravity well. That's what Elon Musk says he wants to do, launch them from the surface with these huge starships. I think that's more, promotion to get funding. Way to make money for starships is to put payloads in the Earth, in Earth orbit, and then go on and launch from there. Build stuff there. In fact, I'm not even convinced building huge rockets from launching from Earth. To me, it seems it would probably make more sense to launch smaller stuff from Earth and build it in space. Not even necessarily on the moon, but in Earth orbit or lunar orbit, and then launch it from there and not from a gravity well. Anyway, related to that, my question is, when does it look like the third Starship launch is going to be? The Marcus House video I watched this morning seemed to suggest that it's not going to be this week, that they still haven't gotten a successful wet dress rehearsal on that. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so you think they're better off with, like, launching starships, assembling what you need in Earth orbit, and then going from there. I agree. To send everything all over the moon, all the way to the moon, and then, you know, prep everything a quarter of a million miles away and try to, you know, build a Mars rocket from that location. I don't see that as being viable. I like having a base on the moon. I want to get my QSL card from a lunar base. I agree with that. To get to Mars, you're going to have to do it from Earth. Yeah, absolutely. And as far as Starship, Starship number 3, I guess, the first two blew up, that was scheduled for a couple of weeks, I guess, from now. Now they're looking at it. You saw it on YouTube. I read it somewhere where they said, talking about possibly April now. Maybe next month, March, or one article said maybe April. We'll see. And not sure what's holding them up. They did say they plan on doing it like a week or so from now, but because of President's Day, it has to do with opening up the roads and everything in Boca Chica, Texas. You know, because it's a holiday, you know, you have people down there and you can't launch a 400-foot rocket when you have people running around Texas, down in that part of Texas. So they have to wait for those people to clear out. But there must be some other... What did the YouTube say? Why are they so far behind? I mean, you know, he made it seem like he was going to have this thing, you know, lickety split. Back to you, Frank. WS2X.
Yeah, well, Elon Musk always says he's going to do everything yesterday. We know that. He kind of drives his people effortlessly. I'm not sure how he manages to keep any help. there is a tech recruiter on YouTube who talked about what it takes to get a job with him and said you have to be in like the top 1% of the class and really driven for them to even consider hiring you. I think the reason I've seen implied on a couple of videos, first of all, we're not really sure, but I think the reason that's been suggested is that the first set of Raptor engines that were on Booster 10 and possibly Ship 28 did not work to specs, and they were replacing all the engines and going through the whole test process again. Go ahead.
That time complete.
Yeah, that sounds, sounds like a problem. I mean, they get better at pulling engines out and all of that, but if they have to change out a lot of them, that's not good. And anybody that's listening, it's 33 engines on the bottom of that Starship. And, wow, okay. Yeah, that makes sense, Frank. We'll see what happens with it. Okay. He's going to have a competition one way or another. You know, you have New Glenn. Just read about them. You know, the New Glenn rocket being built by Blue Origin. They're moving along. They have multiple rockets almost ready. And they talked to the guy in charge, and they had an interview with guy at Blue Origin down in Florida, and he one of the questions early on is that the news reporter asked was, you know, are you going to be able to launch this year? And the guy's answer was immediately, he just said yes. He knows they're going to go, and they're going to launch them on Complex 36 that they have totally rebuilt over the years. $1 billion into that project, and hopefully we'll have another heavy lift vehicle online by the end of this year. And then they have many vehicles, you know, starting to, you know, come off their, I guess, their assembly line. And they have a lot of launches, you know, dozens and dozens of launches planned for New Glenn, not only for themselves with the Kuiper Starlink-like broadband system to go up. But they have contracts with other satellite companies that need things to be put into space. So they have a lot of stuff on the manifest, Frank.
Paul, got a question?
Sure, go right ahead. WS1.
What would it take to get to Mars and beyond?
Did you say what's it going to take to get to Mars?
Yes, and to go beyond Mars, to the next planet.
Yeah, well, I mean, this thing that NASA built, the Space Launch System, is actually designed to not only go to Mars, but the way they talk, you know, beyond Mars. They have the capability of sending eventually unmanned spacecraft, you know, to the outer planet, and I'm not sure what, you know, where you would send a crew beyond Mars, but you know, theoretically they could do it, you know. You know, they have that. I mean, this particular rocket, the Space Launch System, that they launched there 2 Decembers ago for a test to go around the moon, has the capability of heading over to Mars and beyond. But that's a long way off, Charlie.
How long would it take to get to Mars?
Yeah, well, the crew, if you're going to bring a crew, send a crew to Mars, you need, roughly right now, you need, let's call it 6 months to get there. Roughly a year living on the planet, and roughly they call it 4 months coming back. But you know, there's a different location of where Mars would be in the orbit. So you're looking at roughly a 2.5 year project, at least, you know, for a crew to do something like that. But to get there, you know, they estimate 6 months right now. That's what it takes. When they launch these spacecraft to go to Mars, we have plenty of things in orbit right now. Plus, we have a couple of rovers still riding around on Mars. It takes roughly 5.5-6 months, sometimes a little longer, depending
where Mars and Earth are located during launch, but roughly a half a year to get the Mars chart.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, you can understand that too. You know, Mars, of course, you know, the next planet out. You know, so as we go around, we make one trip around the sun. You know, Mars makes roughly a half a trip around the sun. So you know, for every one. Roughly every one orbit of Mars all the way around, Earth goes around twice. So that means, you know, every year, or every two years that go by, our 2 years, things are lined up pretty good. Mars is relatively close to us, you know, every 2 years. So that's what happens there, you know. No matter what, so you always have these, you know, these launches are planned. You know, Mars launches. There's always, you know, a year in between. You know, you say, why don't they go out next year? What are they waiting for? But you know, the planets don't align themselves until every 2 years. So that's why you'll see that. You know, it's actually a little longer than that. So 27 months, but you know, roughly every 2 years, things line up. Looking at the time, I'm starting to go way over our 11 o'clock limit here, and I didn't realize that. Anyway, we'll shut this thing down. We have a couple of more topics we can cover. I can save them to next week, although I'll be wound up about this landing, I'm sure, next week too. Hopefully, Odysseus is the name they give it, but hopefully, I call it Nova C, made by Intuitive Machines, lands successfully on Thursday. I got my fingers crossed. Hopefully, it works out. Roy, over to you. 18-2GS is WS2N for the Space Night Report. For the tech night.
Quickie, this is Kilo Echo 2, Alpha Juliet Uniform. I'll speak to you next week.
KD2FIU?
Okay, Georgia. Yeah, I didn't hear you in there. George, go ahead.
Hi, Paul. And my understanding, after Mars, we don't have anything more with tropospheric surface. After that, it's gaseous. Everything of the planets have gaseous. Are more into stratospheric. And the surface of the planets do not exist after Mars. Once you get into Jupiter and after that, I'm checking with you on that, but I believe Mars would be the fourth and final tropospheric surface level planet that we could actually land on if we wanted.
For people, yeah. You can't land on the planets, but you can land on their moons, which actually we've already done before. We had the Hygiene lander that landed the Huygens. I think you used to pronounce it one way, I pronounce it another way. The Huygens lander landed on Titan, which is a moon going around Saturn. So, you know, we've actually landed there. And you could land people there. I mean, you don't need a spacesuit, but, you know, you could theoretically land on that moon, which would really be cool, looking at the rings of Saturn, you know, right next to you. Back to you, George.
So the other planets are not the way we understand planets. They're actually in gaseous form, with the moon around them may have a tropospheric levels, but after Mars, goodbye.
Yeah, all gas giants, you know,
Jupiter, followed by Saturn, followed by Uranus, followed and then it's, well, we could go to the planetesimal, they call it now. It's not officially a planet. We could, why can't we go to Pluto? Let's go there. George 73, we'll catch you, we'll listen to you like we listen every week on the Swap and Shop tomorrow night. And then that's right before you is the Club Nut. We always listen to that, always check into that as well. And then after you, they would have Amateur Radio News Line, which is great to listen to as well. Back to you, Roy, AC2GS. We're a little late, WS2N, for the Space Net Report for the TechNet.
Yes, indeed, AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the Space Net Report. Thank you for all that you do here on the Technical Net and all that you do for the club. Everyone appreciates it, and I particularly appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I hope you had a little fun. Hope you learned a few things. And I hope you'll join us next Sunday night when we do it all over again at 8 p.m. Our rebels now are done, so I will remind you of Dick, K2RIW, would end his technical nets with the advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And I will add good old Epictetus, the old Roman philosopher. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open to things. And as always, I wish you a safe and warm and dry week. And I hope you'll be able to join us again next Sunday. And this is AC2GS, and I will be clear after I use my usual ending line, which is Slava Ukraine.
WS2N? Yes. KD2BXO. Not sure if you're able to hang out a couple more minutes. Go ahead.
There were two stations there, Frank. And I'm not sure even who you were calling, by the way, Frank.
Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, okay, I actually misspoke. I did intend to call you, Roy, but somebody else wants to get in there, let them go first.
Thank you, WS2N, KD2BHD, Jim.
Yeah, Jim, we're still here. Back to you.
If you got a minute, I remind you of the oddity I've noticed of the that neighborhood where our new rocket is going. I use that term loosely. That Shackleton crater, it gets weirder looking every day. And when I walk in the wilderness and I see a straight line, I know it's not, you know, natural. And the next closest thing to a straight line is a perfect circle. So any curiosity building, I'm like, what's going on there? I don't have a theory, but it just looks weird to me.
Yeah, well, I've seen the pictures of Shackleton, you know, and they have pretty good pictures now. They actually have infrared pictures that have been taken. It goes down like, what, a mile or two or something? It was deep. The rim is quite as well. But at the bottom, they say there's frozen ice down there. Now, this one's not going to Shackleton. It's going rough. I guess, you know, maybe close to Shackleton. Malapapa, I think it's called. It's another crater not too far from Shackleton. But, yeah, the South Pole. So they'd like to set up a base there because they got a lot more sun on a, you know, for more days. And that, you know, it's a good location. And then on top of that, they'll be able to someday dig that ice out of there and utilize it. In fact,
I'm no Rubik's Cube solver. I'm no mathematician. But I watched Sesame Street, or whatever it was, when I was a little kid, and there was that one of these things is not like the others. One of these things just doesn't belong. And that crater doesn't look like any other crater I've ever seen a picture of.